Two dudes watch cartoons. Two dudes watch cartoons. Two dudes watch cartoons. Two dudes watch cartoons. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Welcome back to Two Dudes Watch Cartoons, the podcast where two dudes, that is us, watch cartoons. My name is Evan.
And my name is Alex, and thank you for joining us. We've jumped in a time machine. We're going back 4 years ago. Me and Evan today are covering Avatar: The Last Airbender again.
The live action.
Yeah, but this time we're doing Netflix's live action adaptation. And man, you know, I guess this is not a hot take, but man, we are in the time of live action remakes of things.
Yeah.
We have been for a while. Yeah. Yeah. For better or for worse. It's been happening now for a while, but this to me, I don't want to say we've hit like the saturation point, but this to me was like, oh, wow, we're making live action remakes of like everything.
Yeah. This, I mean, I guess it is, what, 15, 20 years old at this point?
It is true. Very true. It feels fresh and new to me.
It feels fresh and new because there was also that resurgence in 2020, which is why we started this whole podcast in the first place.
Yeah, well, it hit Netflix.
Yeah, it hit Netflix. And that's where it's... Big resurgence. There's pieces in the New Yorker writing about why it's like why it stands the test of time.
Yeah, and so I wonder how quickly... Netflix, the animated series Avatar, the animated series. I wonder how quickly that hit Netflix and Netflix's, you know, algorithm or data crunchers were like, oh my God, we need to make more of this instantly. Oh,
yeah. I'm sure it was instant. Okay. Netflix announced it in 2018. Started production in 2019, so even before
they got the numbers,
they're like, the projections are all there, this is the perfect piece of content.
Hey, okay, well, I ain't hating because they were on to something. We love Avatar. We watched it near instantly, you know. Yep. Despite whether we were recording or not, it's number one on Netflix in like 80
73 countries.
Yeah. Oh, it's something ridiculous. I actually think it's gone up since you sent me that tweet.
Probably.
And so it is why this live action remake is widely being discussed right now.
Yeah.
What, like, in depth, every other tweet on my timeline is about Avatar, the live action series, The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
So we have been following very closely the production, people who got to watch it early, what people were saying about it. And for me, let me just map out where we were. 2019, I was like, yes! And then along production, I was still like, yes, 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 yes. Somewhere along the road, I think it was actually recently, it might have been like a month or two ago, I saw a clip and something in my stomach dropped. Yeah. And I was like, oh, no.
Yes. Well, I mean, so let's talk about expectations a little bit, because it is also a theme in season one of this show. But the initial announcement was obviously met with a lot of enthusiasm, but also trepidation, because let us not forget, there is a previous live action adaptation from the year 2010, directed by M. Night Shyamalan, starring Dev Patel as Zuko, and I don't know anyone else who's in that movie, but universally panned. And so that's the fear that was relatively recent, or, you know, still present in people's minds. Live action adaptations don't have the best reputation. Warranted, I think. So I think people were cautiously optimistic about it, as was I. And I think it was about a month or two ago, once the marketing campaign really kicked off for it, there were a couple of clips that really took the wind out of my sails, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I was like, oh no, what's about to happen here? That being said, I went in, as I do with anything, I try very little to prejudge. I it's human nature, so I'm not going to sit here and be like, I go in completely blank slate. That's just not true.
Yeah.
But I always try to go in with a calm and even head. And I think for this, if you have not watched and you're looking for the recommendation whether to watch or not, 100% you should watch. You need to remember, though, that it's an adaptation. It's not going to be a shot-for-shot remake, nor, after thinking on it, yes, I was going to say, nor should it be. And so that's where I've landed, is that while I do not find this to be perfect, it is really good. And it is a lot of fun. And the changes that they've made, once you finish the season, I think all make sense, in my opinion.
For sure. You know, obviously, the initial season animated show is 22 episodes, about
exactly
a half hour long. This is
so we're working episodes. With like 11 hours of content that they're going to squeeze into eight.
Actually, I was digging into ATLA Reddit the other day just to see what people are saying. And one of the dumbest arguments I think I saw was like, you know, the original season half hour, 22 episodes or whatever, is like 8 hours of content. Netflix is also eight episodes, hour long, 8 hours of content. You could have squeezed in all of the storytelling without, you know, having to cut anything. And I was like, you clearly don't have an understanding of why they do this. Eight episodes, CGI budgets, production budget in general. Like, it's not also, just a matter of like minute for minute, one to one. It's one of the dumbest criticisms I've seen.
Also, there's a lot of dumb criticism, so we can get into that. But so also that just doesn't make sense because notably, and this is what I think it is people are remembering book two and book three.
Mm-hmm. Season one starts off slow.
Season one starts off so slow. And it is very much, you know, at the beginning of each episode, they try to make it serious, but you need to remember this said in partnership with Nickelodeon. It used to be like an Adventure of the Week show before it had a story, before it had a plot. They were going to Kangaroo Island and penguin sliding. And like, there's a whole one where they guide two families through a thing that is notably the worst episode of all time. People wanted that in this? People what the fuck?
Canyon crawlers? Get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck. When they glossed over that with a line of dialogue, I was like, thank God we're not doing canyon crawlers. I said,
brilliant. Brilliant.
Love it.
I love it. I love it. I love it. So I have seen a lot of criticism. And here's the thing. I don't want to sit here and be like, it's criticism proof. Like, you can't criticize it. There are things to criticize. There's plenty to pick apart. But a lot of the criticism I've seen online is misguided. It's like, it's honestly, 9 times out of 10, it is removing this from the live action when it was in the animated makes this absolute garbage.
Yeah.
And it's just not true most of the time. I don't think anything they changed made it garbage.
I agree with almost all the story changes. I mean, they're really not even story changes, just like they're presenting stuff a little bit different. So
they combined a couple things, they speed things up, but like, come on. What the fuck are we doing here?
It's an adaptation.
One Piece live adaptation covered 65 episodes, people. I don't know. Yeah. Like I think a lot of people went into this ready to hate it.
Ready to hate it. Or they were expecting, let's not forget, you know, Netflix has maybe 5 all-time franchises out of the thousands of pieces of content they create. I think people were expecting like Stranger Things out of this, and I think that's what Netflix wanted, and it's not that.
Okay, you're saying they have 5 properties of like all time. I'd argue then there's like 10 to 15 that are like right on the cusp. Like, I think
that's fair.
Look, I think a lot of someone said this on Twitter when we were reading it was about the marketing. Someone was like, why does this look like series of unfortunate events? Like,
And it does.
It does. And what I've realized is Netflix has a little bit of a style when it comes to these things. Like, One Piece had it. But here's the thing. They're taking these live action adaptations, bringing it into the real world, but they're still keeping, in my opinion, what made it animated for a lot of, especially I'm talking like One Piece, the crazy character designs, the wild, wacky, whatever. Here in Avatar, he's in the snow, in the South Pole, wearing his like airbender garb. I was like, the whole time I'm like, dude, he has to be freezing. But like,
he's been in the ice this whole time.
He's been in the ice this whole time. He's like, this is kind of warm out here, actually. Yeah.
I mean, I do want to explore just like the conversation around expectations more before we dig into the season. But here's my headline. Netflix's Avatar The Last Airbender adaptation is fine. It's fine. It's fun. It's better than fun. Okay.
I think it's better than
I had a lot of fun with it. But like, if
fine like, almost sounds like an insult to me. I think it's good. If it's like, if the rating goes fine, good, great, I think it's like good. Good plus.
Okay. I'm between a fine and a good. Like,
okay, you're fine plus.
Yeah, I'm fine plus. It's like
not good minus.
Okay, good minus. I'm good minus because I
hell yeah, I had all right, so we much got
fun. I had so much fun watching this show,
dude. Yeah. It was really good, and here's why: because if you're a fan of Avatar, there are so many additions to the story that you should fucking appreciate as a diehard fan of Avatar, in my opinion. And like I said, we can get into it. I think we should go episode by episode like we did for the Avatar podcast back in the day.
Run it back.
Throwback.
I can summarize the worst part of all about all the discourse online.
Let's talk about, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. The worst part about all the discourse, all the criticism, everyone bashing this show is that everyone is missing the mark about what's bad. It's what's bad is that, okay, the CGI, while good, it just doesn't capture the spirit of.
I don't agree, but go
on. Okay, that's fine. Some of the fight scenes, while the fight choreography is good, it just, you know, it can't get to the pacing of the animation because of the laws of physics, you know, and like the capabilities of these actors. The second thing, I think the biggest thing, you sort of mentioned it, is like their Netflix does sort of have this in-house style. It's just it's a factor of how this show is made and shot a lot on green screen. And for so much of this show, they're not in an actual environment. There's not sets and props for them to interact with. And so it's a lot of young actors
on that a little. I want to push who back don't know on that what the little, fuck to do with their not hands. Marvel's dome of green
it's not
screen.
That.
They are on ground and like they have buildings that like you
at
don't
times,
see in. Okay, I didn't notice it. You're saying you had issues with the green screen. I'll be honest, until you pointed it out, I didn't think they used a lot of green screen. I know they used some.
I don't have issues with the green screen. I think it's that combined with the fact that it's a lot of younger actors who
maybe aren't as used to that.
Because you can tell there's a big difference when it's, I'll say like Azula's gang. Talking around, you know, when they're shooting the arrows, it's a lot of them just standing, like cutting back and forth between people doing dialogue like this and that, because they have nothing to interact with, as opposed to when they're in the engineer's shop or whatever, and there's trinkets and there's tables lying around, and there's stuff
they're
for them to do.
Look at each other more properly, sight line. I get what you're saying. And that is one of my criticism, is not at all times, because I don't want this to be a blanket statement, but a lot of the dialogue feels a little flat at times. Like if it's not an emotional or a big moment, it just feels very, I'm reading a line almost at times. Yeah. So look, I'm not trying to, I loved it. I had a ton of fun with it. I'm not trying to sit here and say it was perfect. So there are issues. I think some of the acting, like I said, the problem was like some of the acting was so good that it really noticed any mediocre acting.
Yeah, and also it's a very young cast, so I don't want to hold any of that against them. And I also think some of the young cast hits it out of the park.
I agree. Let's get into it. I want to get into it.
Okay,
episode one.
Can I say one more thing about expectations?
You can say as much as you want.
You know, a lot of people are holding this in comparison to One Piece. The one thing I'll say about, obviously, One Piece was so much fun, tons of fun. And so people are like, oh my God, good adaptations are achievable. I also think part of what makes this, like the disparity maybe in people's expectations and quality, is that the One Piece, no disrespect to Oda, characterizations are a lot more one note.
Yes.
You're not really digging
not
into much character. Whereas these characters are a lot more layered,
really,
and you're relying
out
on a much younger cast to do it. So if you can set
really
those things
point.
Aside, there's a lot to love. As a fan of the show, as a devout fan who started a podcast with my best friend because we love this show so much, I just had a ton of fun. Like, don't go into it thinking it's gonna, like, it, you know, it just appreciate, like, if you just want more Avatar content to be in the world, this is a great addition to it.
This is perfect.
This is great.
It's, I don't see where, this is like always a good litmus test for me. Mm-hmm. I think people who had never watched the animated show who would go into the movie would be like, trash, horrible, never going to watch the animated show. I think if you were have never seen the animated show and you watch this first, you're still going to get a sense of what everything's about. Like, you could go to the animated show and be like, oh, I get this. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying this should be used as a vehicle to introduce people to the animated show, but if it
it's
were,
a good one.
It's a good one. Exactly. And so.
And I think it's for a wider audience, too.
I agree.
It's not just for the Avatar fan.
Fuck, man. First 10 minutes, we had someone burned alive.
That was crazy.
That was crazy.
Which is weird tonally because it starts with that note, but also, like, a lot of the, you know, the dialogue and just the whole vibe of the show is seems at times more aimed at kids than the cartoon was, like the tone of the show. But I think that's me not remembering all of season one, you know, and season one starts.
I do think Avatar fans need to remember that. Season one started a lot slower. I think if this is an indication of how book two and three are going to go, I think it's a really great sign. Only going to go up. Much like the original Avatar, they get better as the seasons go on.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm not trying to say they're doing a bit here, but they're hitting their marks. I think they got this. So, let's start with episode one. I don't think I want to go episode by episode, but I do want to discuss, like, major
moments,
differences or changes. We open totally different than Avatar: The Last Airbender animated. We open on actually in the Fire Nation, and there's a spy. Or there's an earthbender who's trying to get the plans back home. This was a double fake out because we opened and I was like, what is this? I don't know this scene. What's going on here? Not what you expect with a live adaptation, but it's a beautiful, I'll be honest, my jaw was on the floor because this is where I was like, oh, the bending is beautiful. The fire bending in particular, I think the fire, if we're going to rank the visuals of the bending, I think the fire bending is great. But then, so this was a fire and an earthbender, and it was gorgeous, this whole fight scene. And a lot of the fight choreography reminds me of, like, classic Jackie Chan.
Yeah. And I think I want a little more of that, because sometimes the bending, because it's them, two people doing kung fu 10 feet apart, can look a little silly. But there are moments where, like, I mean, I think it also gets better as the show as the season progresses. Zhao versus, I'm jumping right to the end. Zhao versus Zuko, they're doing hand to hand. They're doing, and I love that stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll get there. But I think the bending fights were one of the huge strengths of this.
Absolutely.
This, absolutely, unlike the movie. Do you remember the movie? They do 10 karate moves to get one rock to,
Okay, here's, I think the biggest crime, the person most at fault is whoever's running the Netflix marketing. They picked the worst clips of the show to put out there.
I don't understand, because maybe they wanted to, here's the thing, they know Avatar fans are going to watch it regardless, probably. Like, they're like, save the good shit. I don't know.
I think that was a bad tactic.
Yeah, it's a bad call.
All the acting clips, like the cast, they would do, like, these dialogue scenes on the back of Appa, Sokka, and Katara, and, like, it was not the best bits of their chemistry. I don't know who picked these clips.
I was going to hate Sokka.
Same.
He was so great. I thought he was perfect.
The best. Yeah. I don't know about the best.
I think Aang was the best. I think Aang was the best. I think Sokka was a close second, though. And unfortunately, I think the worst of the actor to adaptation is probably Katara.
Yeah. And I think there's room to grow because they are, again, are young.
Yeah. And some of it actually could have been writing.
A while ago.
Okay. Some of it could have been writing. I don't know. I don't want to blame all her acting, but she felt more one-dimensional than the cartoon version.
Okay. Yeah.
You don't agree?
I don't necessarily agree. I think it's just a little bit of writing and just like her performance, which is
I
fine.
Think that's what I said, so I think okay. You agree. Okay.
It was good minus.
Okay. So what is so interesting about this opening to me?
Yeah. Oh, it's also 100 years in the past.
It starts 100 years ago. We see the Fire Nation attack. And yep. What's so interesting to me is there's even a gambit where the Fire Lord was like, we're going to attack the Earth Nation. And so the Water Tribes and the Earth Nation, they start fortifying like Omashu and like probably Ba Sing Se. And then they were like, psych, we're going for the Airbenders.
Which is, yeah, we get to see Gyatso and we get to see a whole herd of Sky Bison.
We see what Aang lost.
Yes, we do. And a big point of contention that I see online, it's one of those viral hate tweets.
Oh, dude, don't. It makes me so... Go ahead.
Take issue with Aang's entrance. He comes floating down from one of the spires.
I'll say it. He flew down. No, I'm just kidding. He floated.
People, it does kind of look like he's flying. Even me watching, I was like, is this motherfucker flying? But then you watch a little closer. He's descending and like slowing down his path. People say, it's like, oh, what's the point of Zaheer then in Legend of Korra? It's like, guys,
one, that ain't
blame
happening.
It on the VFX. Like, two, that's not what's happening.
He was not flying. He wasn't floating. He had not like untethered from Earth.
Yeah.
Plus, as an airbender, he can fucking propel himself off the ground. He just cannot float like Zaheer. I feel like there's such a difference between that. You know what I mean? Like, he can use air to push himself up. People also had an issue that Avatar Kyoshi rocketed off via firebending.
Yeah.
There's a ton of precedent that firebenders can do that. What are you talking about?
The Kyoshi shit looked so CW to me. I can't explain.
Dude, looks really? Like that's Firestorm. So funny because I actually love... You hate Firestorm. Oh my god. I really liked the Kyoshi stuff. Okay.
No, I liked it too. It did that moment. Sometimes it feels this is like if CW did Avatar in the best way, cuz CW makes these kind of campy shows that the fans absolutely like, that
you're right.
Develop
they
very
eat it
devoted
up.
Fan
they,
bases.
Supernatural
that's
was
sort
a
of
CW
the quality
show, yeah.
You're in for. It's like
I have never seen one single episode of Riverdale, but I watch a guy on TikTok like recap episodes of Riverdale.
I'm very invested in the cast. I've never seen an episode, but anytime I see them in interviews, I'm like, yeah, I want to know what's going on.
See what they're talking about here.
Cole Sprouse or Dylan Sprouse. What's his name?
It's one of those two. Jesus, I don't even know. So we start with Gyatso. And Aang's relationship, really fun, really nice. And he's got to tell him he's the Avatar. And we see Aang run and take off, which this may be one of my issues. I want to talk about it with you.
Okay.
In the cartoon, I always remember it as Aang kind of actually like ran off. Like he was like, he ran away from home. Like, I don't want to be the Avatar here. He was kind of like, I just need to go, like, think up in the clouds.
Oh, I am not remembering this specific instance. But this is sort of, isn't this one of the big things people have an issue with? Is, like, a couple days, maybe last week or something, there was, like, a clickbait headline that was about, like, in this show, Aang is ready to embrace his destiny as the Avatar. And people were like, oh, no, he's supposed to be reluctant, blah, 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 blah.
Oh.
I feel like people were baited into so much of, like,
they were,
discrediting.
Yeah, and I agree.
It's totally an incorrect read.
It's a ruse. But so this is probably what they're referring to then, is that he's not like denying the fact that he's the Avatar and running away. He's just like, I got to think on it. It gets caught up in the storm, which is, fine. I think, once again, if you just watch up until this point, you might take issue with it. But if you finish the season, Aang's very reluctant to take on his Avatar duties the whole time.
Yeah, I think everyone embracing those criticisms about like mischaracterizations, I think didn't watch the show. There's no
The other one, I didn't even know I was going to bring it up, but the other one, we're talking into these clickbaity head titles.
Yeah.
Everyone is mad that they have removed Sokka's sexism. What a time. Yeah. That's just who he is. It's part of his character arc. He's got to be sexist.
Yeah.
So, look, there is some merit to what these people are saying, but I feel like they are missing the mark.
They're missing the point, yeah.
Of, like, you can have character growth without being, like, a total D-bag to start. You know what yeah. I mean? And I think they nailed it. Once again, I don't know Sokka is, like, oh, women are less than. He's just more so, I am better than in this. Yeah. Which I think is a fine place to start.
Absolutely. And that sort of goes, you know, at the beginning, that sort of, it gives his relationship with Katara a nice path to grow on. It's not outright saying, you can't do this because you're a girl. They said in the fucking animated show, if you remember, because it's a kid's show. Target demo is like 8 to 12, so they would say shit like that.
Yeah.
And it's perhaps implied here.
We can be a little more adult and understand what's going on. And so I'm really shocked by, like, the early reviewers discussing films, which is, like, a outlet I really respect. Like, just trashing this thing, because I don't think it's trash worthy at all. Like, you can, I could understand maybe being like, dang, I was a little disappointed, but I really don't understand walking out and being like, that was awful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are a couple things against it before it came out, you know.
Yeah, but that's what Brian I'm saying Kinesco is I think these...
and forgetting the other guy's name left the show midway through.
Yeah, but you realize now what that was, why they left, is because they struck this deal.
They
started this own thing. And so, like, once again, I'm total mischaracterization. Everyone's like, oh, they left for creative differences.
Yeah. No, they left
That's for not money. Really what happened. They got a different job is what happened. Instead of being a consultant, they're running a studio. Which job do you think they should take?
Yeah. The other one, which I think, you know, this came out when the show was maybe announced, but I think there was a headline that was like, this show is going to be four people who enjoy Game of Thrones. And I think that really threw off people's expectations of, like, what they were aiming for.
Why would someone say that?
Because, you know, Game of Thrones was a hot show back then. But I think what I'm assuming here, but I think
they just saw the person get burned alive and they were like, Game of Thrones.
No, I mean, this is like years ago when they announced the show. I think what people thought they meant tonally, they just meant, it's like a big, expansive show, big budget, with a lot of world building.
A fantasy world.
A big fantasy world, and not so much tonally or acting quality-wise, because it's very much a kid's show. So, like, color your expectations.
This is so rough, though, because there are some really rough acting performances, but there are some really stellar acting performances, and there's some great acting moments from some not-so-great actors in it.
Oh.
Yeah. So we can get into that more.
Okay.
But
yeah.
I think that's what's so rough for me, is it's so hard to just black and white be like, the acting was trash, because I don't think that's true all the way through. I think Aang, while at times is not great, when he nails it, he nails it. He had me tearing up a few times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as the show goes on, I just become more endeared with that actor.
I love him. I love him by the end of it. Yeah, he is Aang to me. He's way better than the live action one.
Aang.
He's not even in the same ballpark as Aang. My name is Aang. I am the Avatar. I don't even remember. He says it's so weird.
The internet and all of its criticisms for the show and all the discussion around it lacks nuance? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yeah.
That's what I mean when I say the show is fine. It's not the best show. It's not the worst show. It's a solid show.
I think I'm going to watch it again.
Enjoy. Yeah, I might too.
You think you'll watch it again? Okay, good.
That kid is so good.
Gordon Cormier. Do you want to not rank him? Let's put him in categories, you know, classic.
Sure. We can talk about their individual performances and what we liked and didn't like. So Aang,
we'll start with Aang. Loved him.
There were
a couple of dialogue. I think my criticism with him is I could never believe that him and Katara are going to get together.
Yeah. And I think they sort of don't lay that groundwork a ton.
We could get into that. But so I don't, some of his chemistry isn't great. I think his greatest chemistry is with Appa, which means I think he's just best at monologuing.
I think his best chemistry was with Zuko.
Oh, you're right. No, you're 100% right. Yeah. You're 100% right. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I think he has to, when you get some of these kid show dialogue lines from an actual, I don't know, he's what, 9 or 10 years old when this
he's
is
young.
Being shot.
He's really sounds, young.
It sounds like, it sounds a little kid showy. It's, I don't want to say corny, but like,
yeah,
tonally, I think that's what us 30-year-old Game of Thrones enjoyers, people who are bashing the show right now, are like, oh, this is so corny. This is so cheesy. Like, yeah, it's a fucking kids show. Like, so he gets a lot of that dialogue, and from his cutesy little voice, yeah, I can see where you might not enjoy
his,
that.
His humor, 10 out of 10.
Humor, 10 out of 10. He does well with the action scenes. Some of the Jackie Chan things you're seeing, there's a,
yeah,
they do it in Omashu, him and Zuko. I think he does practice martial arts, the actor does. So, you know, I hope as the season progresses, I need him to do a season 2 and 3 soon, because he's already, you know, a couple of years older now. His voice has dropped in some of the press tour of it a little
Maybe
bit.
That's what we need, though. Maybe yeah, that's what perhaps. We need. I think he did great. Just going, oh, anything else on Aang?
His performance only gets better as the season goes on, and he really nails some of the serious moments later on, which I really
totally agree, because I think in serious moments early on, outside of the Gyatso stuff, if that makes sense, he was struggling a little, but then towards the end, he really picked it up. I think you nailed that. It was almost like he was getting warmed up.
Yeah, and again, he's a young actor. Like, I'm not going to hold...
I can't act, so I was older than him when I tried acting, and I was ass. I was ass, dude.
Yeah.
I'm excited for more of him. I know you said you're worried about his voice deepening, but
I'm not worried. I just, you know, before he's like 20 years old and buff.
Please, yeah. We don't need another Harry Potter where he's like a 29-year-old man playing 17.
Yeah. We talked with Sokka. I was honestly floored. He nails the sarcasm.
He nailed the sarcasm, which it wasn't until he nailed it, I realized how hard it probably is to have that sort of, I don't even know what to call it, playful sarcasm? Like,
conversational, almost. Like, it rolled off his tongue. I forget what the line is in episode one, but Aang is
He goes,
about,
there's
like,
no way you're getting beyond that, and then cut to and they're flying, and I laughed out loud. And I actually saw a tweet, and this caused me to do research. So this people were like, the Gilligan cut. People were like, I can't believe we're doing this joke in 2024. Dude, and someone goes, don't blame the Gilligan cut for being a staple of all television. And I go, the Gilligan cut. And so what I looked up is it was Gilligan's Island that was the first ever TV show to do a joke. It says a smash cut for comedic effect is known as a Gilligan's cut. After a beloved classic TV show, Gilligan's Island. Oh, wait, I had a definition of it. Where did it go? Oh, it's no.
Like where the character's sentence gets cut off.
Here it is. Okay, so Gilligan and his fellow castaways often make an emphatic statement followed by an ironic contradiction of that statement via like editing cut. And I think it's a great 10 out of 10 joke. I think if you can nail it, they nailed it. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. I mean, there was one line in episode one or two where Aang's talking about like his expectations or like the burden he has on him, or maybe his everything, the impossible task they have before him. And Sokka just like, without skipping a beat, he goes, oh, is that all? Like, he's like, oh, you got to save the world, blah, 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 and do all this, this and that, fight the Fire Lord or whatever. And he's like,
oh, is that all? Yeah.
And I was like, great. He's perfect. And again, I blame the fucking marketing. They took the worst bits of the cast banter and to promote the show, and I don't know why they did that.
Yeah, it was like an algorithm picked these clips, and they were like, show these ones. I don't know why I gave the algorithm that voice. So let's talk about Katara.
I think she's a promising young actor. I look forward to seeing her progress.
She's who I was referring to when I said bad actress who gave a really good moment. I think towards the end, maybe like Aang, she needed some warming up. I really actually liked the stuff with her and at the Northern Water Tribe. you know, healing versus fighting. I think she started to actually really get into it there. And so that, like I said, it gave me hope for season two. I was like, oh, maybe it was more intentional to keep Katara, I don't want to say sassy, but a little less outspoken, a little less strong-willed. And maybe they're building towards that. Because I think I got glimmers of that when she was at the North Pole. And man, that fight she had with Master Paku, maybe one of my favorite fights of the show. And then she had a great follow-up fight with Zuko. Those two fights back-to-back, I was like, fucking, oh my God, I put my phone down. You know what I mean? I was like, yeah!
Yeah. I think it's another instance of, like Aang, it's very much younger, not much younger, but like a younger visually cast member, and you can tell, you can tell particularly because of some of the dialogue that they have, Katara and Aang, I don't know, they come off as children, which is like something you understand about the cartoon, but like when you're actually seeing real people at that age in these roles, like
it's different.
It's a little different. So
the disparity of like Aang looking like a kid in the cartoon and Sokka and Katara looking a little older sometimes makes you think they're adults, as weird as that sounds.
Yes, I agree.
Even though they're not. Yeah. And so a lot of Katara this time was boiled down to my mother died, dad's gone. There was a funny point. Another criticism. We'll go to the criticism chart here. There was a point in the middle portion where I felt like Aang and Katara were trading lines of like, the monks used to tell me. And then she was like, well, Gran-Gran used to tell me. And I was like, did they just do this like 6 times in 4 episodes? Like, it's like, are they just trading bits of wisdom they got from elders?
I will say that the first time it was episode 1 or 2, probably 1, that Aang locked in for me. I was bought into his performance. Is when Katara is showing him her little bit of water bending that she can do, the push and the pull.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And Aang goes, the monks say it's all about the breath. Or, I don't know what the fuck he says, but he's giving her like wisdom. And I was like, oh, this kid is pitch
works.
Perfect in this role. It's amazing. It's incredible.
No, I totally get what you mean. It worked, but then there was a point in like episode 4 or 5, I was like, I think they've done this quite a few number of times here, talking about these monks' wisdom and Gran-Gran's wisdom. Evan and I are wannabe movie critics. We're also wannabe chefs.
We're all doing more cooking at home now. If you want to elevate your home cooking, you need nice tools to do it. Louis Kitchenware will get you there. They have beautiful stainless steel pans, nonstick bakeware, knives, all the stuff you need. Safe, high quality materials, constructed to last, made in the United States, founded in Detroit.
Moving into my condo, we got hand-me-downs. So this new Louis Kitchenware has been great, and we love the discount. We want to share that with our listeners.
You can use code 2DUDES, that's T-W-O DUDES, at LouisKitchenware.com, and that'll give you 10% off anything on the site.
Check out our link in bio.
Two dudes watch cartoons. Yeah.
There's two more we got to at least brush on before we maybe dig into more of the show, which is Zuko and Iroh. Zuko played by Dallas Liu. What'd you think?
These two stole the show. These two, I think, stole the whole show. And this is my pitch. I want to give you my pitch.
Mm-hmm.
We're going full adaptation here. Should they have made a live-action TV show that is from Zuko and Iroh's POV the whole time? No, it'd be a totally different show.
Yeah.
It would be very different.
I guess I'd be interested.
Here's why. Uh-huh. I think the biggest strength of this live action is everything Fire Nation related. I think Daniel, what's his name?
Daniel Day Kim. Okay, he's
stellar.
The perfect casting.
I think he's stellar. Best. I think Azula's stellar. I think Iroh's stellar. I think Zuko's stellar. I think all these little bits we get into why the Fire Nation is doing what they're doing and why we see it and the flashbacks. I think this is the entire strength of the live action.
Yeah.
If I was having this conversation with our good friend of the podcast, Tommy, he was like, I think a lot of people's complaint is like, why did this need to get made? Why did this get? And I was like, he was like, people feel like One Piece needs something to shorten it and like get it like a more appropriate length. Yeah. That's why One Piece fans feel like that was needed. And I was like, first off, Hollywood doesn't give a fuck about need. Second, I was like, if there is a need, it was for these Fire Nation scenes. They have done Iroh and Zuko so much justice in this season one, whereas in season one of the live action, they were just the bad guys. They just were. And that was fine. It worked.
Particularly Zuko. My only bit of pushback, I think Iroh is one of the weaker castings on the show.
I think he has the biggest shoes to fill, and so I think it feels more disparaging. Yes. But I think he himself is a great actor, and so I agree with you. At the beginning, I was like, but once he finished, I was like, no, he's Iroh. I see it. When he after I saw him do some firebending, and after my favorite moment of the season, the fucking Lieutenant's funeral. Him and Zuko. That was where I was full. I'm Team Fire Nation here. Yeah. These two are my boys. Look, since we're just talking, I want to talk about this scene, actually. So, Avatar, The Last Airbender, the animated series, one of its strengths was its subtle storytelling. And so that's why the Lu Ten moment in book two is such a hit moment, because you've only heard a little bit about his son that died in war. This show is for the fans. We're past that point of subtlety. Why would you there's no reason to try to fool us anymore. We know what happened. If you're a real Avatar fan, we know what happened. Give us this moment. Give us this moment on a silver platter. Make a meal of it like they fucking did. Zuko, Ozai walks up to Iroh and says, your son, you know, will die a war hero. He will be honored for many centuries for serving the Fire Nation. And Zuko comes up. I've watched this scene three times now. Zuko comes up and gives the most sheepish. This is where his acting finally sold me, because he is younger in this too. He gives the sheepish, like, Luten, and you should be extremely honored and proud that he died in service of the Fire Nation. He starts to walk away, and it's a little cheesy. You know, he walks away and has the moment of, and he comes back and he's like, Luten gave me this medal when I was failing my classes and my dad was really mad at me. And he said he got this for being the highest grades in his officer class. And he said it was meant to be with someone who was destined to do great things. He goes, he gave me strength in a time I really needed it. And he gives it to fucking Iroh. And because Iroh has no reaction when Ozai says anything or when Zuko says his first thing, and then he just cries. And it's like, I don't want to say this is like Iroh's turning point or whatever, but like, this is his canon moment. I feel like this was Iroh's origin story that, like, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about. I don't know, like, this, like I said, these Fire Nation scenes is what made this whole season for me. I know that's weird to say about the villain, but like,
I think so.
I think they were the strongest scenes. I think they were the most emotional. I think they were the most complex. We talk about how the show is really layered in these complex emotions and feelings and thoughts. And I thought all of the Fire Nation actors and writing, I thought they nailed that. And that's not stuff we saw in the animated. Like, it's stuff we had to pick up via implications or tiny flashbacks.
Yeah.
Why not give us this? There's some people who are complaining about it online, but I genuinely think this is what made it good plus for me. This is where the plus came from.
Okay. I think I would agree. Yeah. The most compelling stuff comes from the Fire Nation. Absolutely. I guess Iroh for me is, I think that's the only portrayal or characterization that strikes me as even slightly different than the show, which is not a bad thing. It's just the only one that didn't sit right with me at first, but, and it's also because I've seen this guy act in Kim's Convenience, so I like kind of just see Appa.
I won't lie, him not having
he's like a bit of a too much of a
Korean
ham.
Accent. Yeah, I was like, whoa. I was like, whoa. This is because they're still like Asian, so I was almost like, whoa. He's not doing. I was like, that was so weird to be like, oh, that's an accent he was doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I forget his name. Paul something. The actor who plays Iroh does a great job, but you know, that was the only portrayal where I was like, oh, that doesn't feel the same as the
biggest
show.
Shoes to fill though.
Biggest shoes to fill. And it, you know, it's not his job to,
you didn't like
the
scene
the
where the
thing.
Earthbender was interrogating him and he held the boulder over his head and he goes, war brings out the worst in people. He goes, is that your form of an apology? And he's like, I wasn't talking about me. You didn't like that?
I do, but that's where I think like when I watch him, I feel like he has two modes. It's like, cheesy Appa like ham, or I have to give a serious lie.
But that's Iroh. That is Iroh, though, in the show.
Iroh in the original show is maybe a little more subtle to me, but that's the only cast member I really disagreed with. But he does a great job in the show, and I came around. Okay. I warmed up to it.
I want to fight you more on this, but I understand because I had a similar reaction to start. But
yeah.
Like I said, I think him and Zuko, man, when he at the end was like, "Oh, Prince Zuko, I'm going to come with you like on this the boat." And he goes, "I'm not going to be coming home for like a really long time, you realize." And he was like, "I have everything I need on this boat." Devastated.
That was devastated. Yeah.
While we're on it, let's just keep talking about the Fire Nation stuff. So another moment they added, or I'm just was never smart enough to pick up on the animated series, was the 41st unit, 41st division. So we knew
I think that's like a combining two things.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Right. We knew Zuko fell out of favor with his father for questioning his war tactics about sacrificing a troop just so they could get favorable ground in a fight. Zuko's like, "That's wrong. We can't sacrifice anyone." And that's what starts the Agni Kai between the two of them. But then, in such a great twist, the 41st Division then, the one that they were going to sacrifice, is the one that was sent on with him. They were banished with him to go to get the Avatar. So Iroh the whole time, because I actually was like, Iroh's talking out his ass when he's like, he cares about all of you more than you know. And I was like, no, he doesn't. He's a little brat right now. And then they showed that flashback, and I was like, I got to eat my words.
Yeah.
I was a hater too. I was like, that was brilliant writing on in my opinion. And it adds such a layer to the Iroh Zuko quest for the Avatar. Like, it's good. It's really good. And in the anime, I'm 99% sure Ozai sent Iroh with Zuko. And I like that in this one, it was Iroh being like, "No, I'm going to come with you. I want to come with you on your journey."
I really liked that touch. I think their chemistry is fantastic. So, you know, any qualms I have with the Iroh actor, I'm good. I'm throwing them behind me. I got to let the past go.
to live in the present, you have to let the past go.
So, the moment that sold it for me, their chemistry is so good. The episode with the bounty hunter.
He's like,
"Why would I want to work with a lowly bounty hunter?" And she says something like, "Why would I want to work with a spoiled boy or something?" And he's like, "I'm not a boy." And then he's like slapping. they start slap fighting each other as Iroh's trying to reprimand him or something.
Yeah, he's like, behave.
So funny. It was perfect. Out loud. It was like some of the character beats in this, some of the comedy is really good. If you are a fan of the show and you miss this and catch these moments.
Secret Tunnel. Come on. Yes. You can't tell me you didn't think Secret Tunnel was going to get cut.
I did not. I would have been okay with a big putt,
tunnel.
But I'm glad it wasn't. What I want to say is Dallas Liu does a great job of portraying the wounded puppy in Zuko that we don't really see till much later on in the show.
Something the live action made me appreciate is how 3D his scar is. I've always pictured it it's got texture and it wraps around closer to his ear than I ever thought.
Yeah.
Like, I've always just pictured it very like this part of his face. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
have you seen people tweet the clip of him going,
"You just stole what I was about to fucking say. You literally stole it. Go ahead. You beat me to it. Go ahead. The tweet, everyone's like, "This acting's ass." And he turns, he goes, "He ran."
It's the best line.
If you watch in context, it makes sense that he says it like that. It was so funny. It was so funny because he's expecting this big showdown with the Avatar. We'll fight to the death. And he ran. It's great. I don't care. These people are haters. I literally was about to say that when you brought it up, though. That was spooky. It was like you read my mind.
We're on the same wavelength.
He ran. It's so good, though. I think it's perfect. It's not a sign of bad acting. I think it's actually the opposite.
Really no, the context I've seen that clip in is people saying this is the best line delivery of all time.
I've seen the opposite. People are like, oh, this is the acting that, like, dude, it's hilarious. Please watch. Yeah,
it's hilarious. And also, if you think about the show is very anime inspired. So you get these very cartoonish reactions.
Yeah,
and
you get cartoonish moments.
Like those silly faces and all that. Like, people have like a selective memory. And are being purposely obtuse about viewing and criticizing this show.
Let's talk about more good acting and casting choices.
Okay.
Suki.
Oh, yeah.
The Kyoshi Warrior.
Yeah.
She was perfect.
Fantastic.
She was, I need more of her. I know she's coming, but like I was bummed she was only in the first or the second two or three episodes, whatever.
Yeah.
I thought she was great. Firelight, as we said, was great. Azula, I was on the fence about, but I think I ended on great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think they're doing something a little different. Not like, I don't want to say the other Azula was just crazy for the sake of crazy, but I feel like they're giving us more of like why she is the way she is, which I appreciate. Yeah.
I think she's maybe occupying a little bit more of the role that Zuko is in the cartoon, where she's like the villain that you see their backstory.
Yes.
And
yes.
Zuko right now is kind of a rival, which I love those dynamics.
We have to talk about, once again, it's all Fire Nation. Another great acting performance / writing expansion, I feel like.
Zhao.
General Zhao.
He's great.
We got to see his political aspirations and like we really got, it was ground into us that he was a nobody Fire Nation like army guy. Like no one cared about him. And he was like, I have a chance to really make a name for myself. And I thought his acting performance was phenomenal. That was him acting in the second half of the season genuinely made me realize, ooh, some of these kids aren't the best actors. Like, he is blowing them out of the water.
Yeah.
And something that is so funny, that guy was in Saw. He's been in so many movies. I can't
Rush
think of his
Hour.
Name right now. He's in Rush Hour. He's in so many movies.
Ken Leung? Is that his
yes.
name?
He also, when auditioning for the movie, was convinced he was auditioning for Avatar. He thought he was going to be blue. But this is what I like, is whenever he learned it wasn't, he stuck with it, and he acted his goddamn heart out.
Yeah, he brought that intensity. You know, what a General Zhao move of him to try and
steal the limelight.
The James Cameron Avatar. No, that's your universal punishment. It's like, you're in the true Avatar.
Yeah. Oh, I thought he did so well, though.
He stabbed
the moon spirit at the end, I knew it was coming, and I gasped still. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? It was very, like, he was really good. And like I said, it was really interesting seeing sort of his, like, political drive, like, his ambition. Like, that was why he kind of got himself involved in something that really didn't, you know, involve him too much.
Yeah.
His fight with Zuko at the end.
It was a great fight because they do a lot of the hand to hand. I loved it. But his demise in the live action, I believe, is different than in the show, correct?
Because Iroh
in this one, doesn't he just like roast his ass and like literally kill him in the live action? Whereas in the show, doesn't he have that moment where he's like he's caught in that bubble of water. I don't know if it's from Aang as the moon spirit or ocean spirit.
You're really testing my knowledge here.
Because does Zuko pull him out of that bubble in the cartoon?
Yeah, Zuko might pull him out, but he's not in book two or three, so he might die.
But I don't know. That was the only moment
I thought
where
whole climax of them attacking the North, beautiful. Like I said, I genuinely think anything that involved a firebender in the series, and not to be biased, I love the firebenders, but I thought, so like, if we're ranking the visuals, I think it went firebending was the most beautiful, earthbending when done correctly was the most beautiful, water, and then unfortunately air, but it was air only because, like, it's technically invisible, like, when Aang was doing stuff with airbending, it was cool. But I'm just talking like CGI practical effects mostly. Mm-hmm. This made me be like, Marvel, you can do better with your visual effects. Like, Ko and the spirit that they fight, terrifying.
Yeah.
The face stealer, He scared me.
Yeah. Also, they never go back and help Haybuy. That was one criticism. I was like, okay, you got me there. They never actually resolved things for Haybuy.
They just no, it's go implied. Off on it's implied. Adventure. I did think it was pretty crazy when, and I don't remember if this is how the anime goes, but like when Aang just left his friends in the spirit world and be like, I gotta go figure out what to do. I was like, that's dangerous, dude. Like, wow, okay. He's like, you're gonna go all the way to the Oh, it was hilarious when he just went into the Fire Nation temple and he was like, hey, I'm trying to get into the temple. And they're like, he's like, you're men of peace. That was so funny. His just like childlike naivete.
Yeah.
One of the weaker parts of the adaptation was Bumi. I was almost actually confused by this Bumi.
Yeah. I don't know.
And his scenes were terrible.
His scenes were bad. The Bumi also was in the marketing.
That's what I mean. Is that fight? That fight was probably the weakest fight, Bumi versus Aang.
Yeah.
Although the rock candy crystal that looked pretty baller when it was growing so fast. It was terrifying, actually.
Yeah, the effects look good, but I just think also the makeup was really bad.
He looked like he looked too much like Bumi from the anime.
So we do, yeah, we do spend a lot of time in Omashu, and they combine a couple episodes. I sort of like that. The engineer, Bumi, like obviously, too. And then Jet is the other big one.
Jet really was hot.
Yeah. He was. He was a handsome
this
guy.
This Jet fucks. I'm just being honest.
All the blasting jelly, I was like, damn. They were really putting all the this
whole
stuff
scene
in a cartoon
where they're
in
shooting 2003. The flaming arrow and Katara's got a water whip it. That was pretty cool. It was a little hokey, but it was cool nonetheless.
It was cool.
They saved it at the last second, and they're like, get the Emperor out of here. one thing I also was disappointed in, and there's more time to come, they did not hit really on, like, the combined mythical animals.
Didn't show enough of them, or what?
Yeah, I want more. Give me a turtle duck. Give me a...
We got some.
We got some. I mean, obviously there's Appa, and I don't know Momo. Momo's just a lemur.
You think of Momo's death scene? That doesn't...
I'm shook. Absolutely shook. By Momo's death scene, dude. My jaw hit the floor. I go, is this going a totally different direction than I thought it was going
to
go?
That's one way to save on the CGI budget for season two.
You're like, get this little fucking rodent out of here. I was emotional. I won't lie. And even when they were healing him, I was like, oh, it's not working. And then they, classic, wait a second before it works.
Whole time I was like, there must have been some other way they could have written a plot point to get to the grove.
When Sokka picks up the dead Momo, I was like, oh my God. He was just limp. It was sad. It was sad, dude.
One actor we haven't talked much about is Daniel Day-Kim as Ozai.
Absolutely fucking terrifying. And do you know what we looked up earlier? And
what?
It's going to take me a second to get the specifics. Daniel Day-Kim is in every adaptation of Avatar.
What? You're joking.
No. Let me look this up. I'm going to pull up his filmography. I sent you this. You don't remember this?
I don't remember seeing it.
Hold on.
Because Ozai is voiced by Mark Hamill.
He's not Ozai in the original. Oh, am I wrong? What's this? Oh, these are films. No, these are movies. Television.
Is he in Legend of Korra?
Yes. Okay. He's General Fong in Avatar The Last Airbender, 2006.
Okay.
He's in one episode.
Wow.
And then in Legend of Korra, he is Sato. He's a reoccurring cast for season one and season four.
Oh, interesting.
Day-Kim is in every adaptation of Avatar The Last Airbender.
And he should be in everyone going forward. He's perfect.
He is really perfect.
Started talking as Ozai, I was like, I don't even hear a difference. Granted, I haven't watched the cartoon in a while, but I was like, this
I just
is
watched
Ozai.
The final fight
this
recently.
Is and was Ozai.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah, he's really good at it. He's commanding, which is almost like not something you could teach someone. He just like commands a room. Like He commands, like, anything you say, you're almost hanging on the edge of your seat. Like, yeah. What's this motherfucker
about
like
to Dr. say? Han.
He's looks like Dr. Han.
The way he commands a room.
I really liked when Azula was like, wow, I can't believe General Zhao found the Avatar after all these years, crazy, and she's walking away, totally tried to reverse psychology his ass, yeah. And he goes, Azula, Zuko was the one that found the Avatar. He has shown great perseverance and resilience in a time of trial. And she might as well have had an eye twitch in that moment. She was like, got it, father. And she like walked away. She was like, I can't have this.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting because Zuko is essentially her obstacle to the throne.
Yeah.
You know, he's the firstborn heir. And so if father likes Zuko now, which there is precedent to the younger one taking because Iroh is older than Ozai. So she's like, it's not impossible. He just needs to not like Zuko is all it takes.
And he goes, there's no room for self-serving flattery and coy whispers.
He got me. I was like, coy damn, whispers. I think he directed that at me. I think he was talking to me specifically.
He was, and during the Agni Kai, I was like, damn, this is fucking built.
Another one of the beautiful fight scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I just like, so I think, and once again, this is where you have to separate the properties. Like, 9 out of 10 people that are watching this live action adaptation are hardcore fans of the original. Yeah. We don't need the secrecy of the Agni Kai, like a mention in season 1, and we don't see it till season 3. Like,
yeah,
just fucking give it to us. And they really gave it to us.
I also think, don't they cut away in the cartoon? Like, they imply it's going to happen, cut away.
Well, we see the audience reaction.
And in this one,
not the fight.
You get like the upward angle shot at like Daniel Day-Kim's face. Like, you might hear a sizzle. I might be making that up, but I might as well have heard a sizzle.
No, there is a sizzle. There's a sizzle. There's bubbling and boiling. But also, I never actually thought that was how the scar got there. I thought it was just like a fireball that hit him in the eye and he was burned. His dad fucking branded him.
Mm-hmm. And he also got him in the shoulder, too.
And he got him in the shoulder. I wonder if we'll see that again, that burn. Yeah. He got him good there.
Yeah.
Like I said, the Fire Nation shit was just firing on all cylinders. You can tell whoever wrote this was like, not enough Iroh and Zuko. Like, give me more flashbacks. More. Let's go to the Fire Nation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was very confused when they even announced Daniel Day-Kim as the Fire Lord. I was like, is he in season 1? I was like, but that's just what I'm saying. He's not in book 1. Him. Yeah, but they needed him in this. And it makes the Fire Nation really menacing without them traveling island to island and the Fire Nation presence being everywhere. Because we don't have that luxury of them. Because if you actually follow a map where they go in season 1, 2, it's very like, we'll go here, then here, then here, then here, then here. And so they're like, oh, and now we got to go north. And so this one, I think those Fire Nation scenes back in his courtroom, I don't even know what to call it. Those are to really give us the menacing feeling of the Fire Nation.
Yeah, he's the Emperor and Darth Vader at the same time. He's so good in this.
He's so good.
Yeah. I mean, not
as Azula Darth Vader?
Maybe. Oh,
if he's the Emperor.
When she fucking hits the lightning.
Oh, dude. People are complaining about that, too. They're like, oh, she just could do lightning, I guess, like, whatever. Well, first off, she can do lightning, whatever, in the show. But also, it was fucking sick. She's like, Dad, I'm done with your shit. Look what I can do. And he was like, once again, great acting. He didn't say anything, but you saw in his face how fucking pleased he was.
He was. And so people are mad. That one of the criticisms I've seen of that clip is like, oh, she can just do it. They're like, oh, they're treating it like bending is just like casting magic instead of a martial arts form. Did you not see her hit the fucking stance and hit her hands?
Yeah.
Do the whole
jutsu. And then she gets real low, which I don't think you and I can get that low.
She hits the whole... Yeah, she hits the whole pose and everything. Bravo, Azula.
We only got one bit of it, but I'm willing to say that lightning bending is going to top fire bending next season. And
probably.
Visually, I think it's going to look sick. Because think about it. It looked sick in 1971 when they were doing it in Star Wars. the technology has only improved.
Yeah. Yeah, people are mad that, like, she doesn't seem as deranged or whatever. And it's like,
let's just put a period on that. People are mad.
People are mad and wanting something to shit on. I'm in my Madam Web era. I watched Madam Web Thursday night before I started.
It's all about the
all
fun.
This.
It's all about the fun.
Madam Web is a fun movie. Pretty bad. This is a fun show. A lot to pick apart, but so fun. And I think it nails the spirit of the cartoon. It's not beat for beat, but
I agree.
It has the same charm, and it's really, really is all there.
I totally agree. And that's all you can ask, is that it has captured the spirit of what the show is going for. It has hit 8 out of 10 plot points that people should want to see. Like, 10 out of 10 of important plot points. But people are so annoying with the things they cut out and miss. And it's like, I don't actually feel like they missed a lot. Like, no. Sure, I'm sure when I go back and watch the animated one, I'll be like, oh, they did leave this out. And they did leave. But, like, I think that's a sign of a good thing that I was sitting there like, oh, I know this isn't everything, but I'm not even, like, I don't feel I'm missing anything. Yeah. There was definitely some things felt rushed. But I'll be honest, I don't give a damn.
I don't care that he didn't learn any water bending. Because let's be
Let's talk about that. What did you think about that?
So I think it makes sense for Katara's arc and where she's probably going to progress in future seasons if they happen. Because her whole arc is, you know, people were mad that she doesn't learn anything from Master Paku in the live action. But it's all about her finding her own self-worth and becoming more self-confident.
Master in her own right.
Yeah, she's a master in her own right. So I don't think that works if she's, her whole season is her doubting her waterbending ability. So I think, why would she be teaching Aang?
Yeah, I genuinely think season two will start with Aang learning waterbending, because now he's accepted. Because I actually really liked his reluctancy to learn any other element. You know what I mean? He has a really hard time in the animated show learning firebending because he doesn't want to. I actually really like, so the two things they've like took from season three that it looks like they're stretching into all their seasons are Aang disagreeing with all the avatars on like what it means to be the avatar, which I think is a great addition to this season when he's talking to each of them and they're like, you have to be your own person, but you got to do it this way. And he's like, but that's not me.
Yeah.
And I liked they're laying those seeds now. And then the other thing they brought in is Aang. Like I said, in the original one, he ran away from his destiny to be the Avatar. But then when he woke up in the ice again, he's like, okay, I guess I got to do this. This one, he wakes up and he's like, I still don't think I need to be the Avatar. Like, he's like, I don't really want to do all this jazz. Yeah. You know what I mean? He doesn't outright say that. But he's like, I'll help people, but I don't really want to be the Avatar.
And when he does go into the ice, looks so fucking cool. That's when I was locked into this show. Envelops in a big ice ball.
Did you see the Las Vegas sphere animation of the ice?
That was awesome.
Dude, so good. And this is what I'm saying is episode one showed us him going into the iceberg. It showed the Fire Nation raiding the air temple. It showed him and Gyatso. Like, I was like, damn, I didn't expect to get all of this in season one, let alone the first 30 minutes. Yeah. And so I actually really enjoyed all those additions. And I think, I think, like I said, once you finish the season as a whole, because people also were complaining, oh, Roku's not his mentor in this one. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
What do you think of Roku's scene?
You beat me to it again. He's the weakest of the Fire Nation actors. He was like,
I liked what they did.
Stop.
Because that actor is a more comedic actor, I think, than the stuff I've seen him in.
He was trying to be Iroh. The actor was like, I'm going to be Iroh in this scene, and maybe they recast me later.
They really turned the table on me.
Avatar Roku was the most different adaptation, I feel like.
But I enjoyed it. He was like, he was being a ham. Well,
they do say he was best friends with Monk Gyatso when they were young. Yeah. He learned airbending at the same time as him. So I'm shitting on it, but I didn't hate it, I should say. Like, I thought it was fine, but I left the scene being like, that's not my Roku.
Not my Roku.
So, but people were mad about that. But then once you see him talk to all three avatars and what he takes from all three of them and gleams, I think you can be like, Okay, I think it makes sense that he's not just talking to Roku the whole time.
Yeah, we got to see Avatar Kurok. I don't know.
They totally changed his storyline.
Did Kurok, they? Really? Okay.
Granted, this is all, which, I think.
Thought it was sweet.
He's like, I liked his story in this,
them
but.
For a lifetime.
Yeah.
Damn, dude.
See, he sounded like Korra in Legend Season 2. So, Kurok in Avatar The Last Airbender animated lore also did not want to be the Avatar and fucked off. For a long time, and yeah. He like surfed and hid from the world.
Good for him.
He lived in an era of peace, that though, guy, so he could yeah. do that. You know what I
that
mean?
That guy has a voice where I just feel like he was in Avatar, but I don't think he actually was.
His voice, I know what you mean. Know. There was a couple times I was like, damn, were they in the original?
Who
I keep waiting for, like? Serena Williams. You think she's going to actually make a cameo again?
Maybe.
She did that promo. Yeah. You saw the promo she did? I was like, no way. She's just such an Avatar fan.
That's awesome. Good for her. Good for them. If you need to record a podcast remotely, riverside.fm is the place to do it. Alex and I have been making Two Dudes Watch Cartoons remotely across states, pretty much across the continental U.S. for 3 years now. We've tried several things, and this is what works best, honestly.
Zoom turned out terrible. We used a couple other ones that we paid for that turned out terrible.
You're looking at the interface right now. I think I'm doing the screen record correctly.
Riverside has made doing this podcast as easy as possible. Riverside FM.
Head to the link in our bio to get started. That's riverside.fm.
Today.
Okay, it's not even a point of contention. I think the only episode that was left out, only story point, was The Deserter, Zhang Zheng, which is a season one episode where he tries to learn firebending the first time from the Fire Nation deserter.
Is that in season one?
I believe so. And he hurts Katara. I mean, yeah, let me double check though before I talk out of my ass here, but
you're blowing my mind. There's still time. He didn't learn, he couldn't even learn water bending this season.
I know. So then when
didn't even realize he didn't learn water bending till it was over. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't take anything away from the story. I wasn't like, he's not learning any water bending right now.
Was he going to do a water whip the whole season?
But I think it also
makes... I know
what
the movie's called. I'm an Avatar fan. Fuck off, haters.
I think it makes his transformation into the Avatar water moon state thing even more impactful. Like, he don't know how to do any of this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So Deserter is episode 16 of season one.
Look at that. That's great. I for some reason thought that was early book three, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, it feels like. Because he does come back.
Because it's fire.
White Lotus.
Yes. Oops, spoilers. Yeah. We get one White Lotus mention. You catch it?
Yeah.
Not mention.
The tile, right?
The tile, yeah. They drop when he's being taken off by those.
Zuko. So.
He dropped it for Zuko.
Yeah.
But still, Zuko knew meant like, oh, he's this way.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think was the strongest episode?
Masks. Episode six.
Yeah, we're in agreeance.
Yeah. Okay. You want to talk about adapting anime, things you don't think you'll see adapted? It's them doing the fucking ladder stilts through the prison. I was like, they fucking did it.
They did it. I recognized it instantly, too. As soon as the ladders go up there, I go, are they gonna? And they did. And I was like, they did.
Bravo.
Because I noticed the ladders were the exact same design. That ladder design sticks out in my head where it's like the one pole with the things all the way. And I was like, and they did it. They fucking did the stilts. It's great. And
you get
that
the
whole
blue
scene,
spirit. I love
the blue spirit.
I love the blue spirit in the animated show, but I don't know if we get as much of this in the cartoon. But after they escape, after Zuko and Aang escape, they're holed up in this little bunker and they're like shooting the shit, talking about how they were raised. Zuko's in a weakened state, so he's not like on the offensive.
He's not being
and he
a bitch.
Delivers a class. Like, do you think we would have been friends back then?
Yeah.
But that is some of the best acting.
Aang's like, back when I was a kid, we were all friends with each other. Like, I had many of Fire Nation friends. Like,
yeah.
I think you and I could have been friends. Because Aang, such a child, doesn't understand at all why Zuko could be releasing him.
Uh-huh.
This is what I'm saying is season one, even though it is very adventure of the week, what a complex villain system where we have like our main villain also fighting against like a different villain with us. Like, so good that he was like, no, I can't let Zhao win. He's like, he's like, you're my prize. Like, it's so good.
But that's some of the best acting we get from Gordon Cormier, the Aang actor. And
I agree.
You know, he had me at episode one when he starts dropping wisdom, but and I mean throughout this season, it starts off much like the cartoon Adventure of the Week, but as you get as it paints this bigger picture and as all the stories start to tie together, it becomes more compelling. So the latter half of the season is like it's moving.
I agree.
I really, really like the last couple episodes.
Totally agree. I think the last three episodes, God, the last four almost, 5, 6, 7, and 8, mm-hmm. I think just really, the second half of the season, I think really come out swinging. 5 is fine until we get to Luten's funeral, and then someone starts cutting onions, and you know, I can't help myself. And so so we both agree that's the strongest point of the season. What do you think, and it doesn't need to be necessarily an episode, what do you think is the weakest moment, adaptation part? What, like, you get what I'm saying? Like, what is the part where you were like, I get the hate? He ran! Just kidding.
No, honestly.
Sorry,
some of the Freedom Fighter stuff. I love Jet, but when they're at the base, I was like, this
Freedom
Fighter! It looks a little too much like a fun ropes course. I was like, yes. That's where some of like the suspension of disbelief.
We didn't even talk about our man Danny Pudi.
Oh yeah, he's the engineer. He does great. He delivers one of the better performances in the show.
Yeah.
But when like some of the suspension of disbelief fades for me when it is just a bunch of kids like hanging out on a ropes course. I was like, okay. Like the animated show paints this much better, obviously.
I agree. For me, and this is maybe too general of a statement, I think it's like any travel time where it's just the three of them on Appa with Momo.
Yeah.
Really, I'm like, oh, I need you guys to land and go interact with other people.
Yeah. And the green screen is like,
that's probably, you're
the
right.
biggest adversary of the show or obstacle. I would also say sometimes when we're watching any non-bender fight and they have to resort to tripping people with their
swords.
The Kyoshi Island was like, I'm watching 10 minutes of Suki and Sokka like scooping people's legs out with whatever they got. I was like, okay, we just watched someone get burned alive. I think we can kill a couple of these dudes.
That's so funny. Oh my God. We saw several people get burned alive.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's get into closing thoughts that we could read some Letterboxd reviews.
Sure. Does Letterboxd have TV show reviews yet?
Oh, I don't know. Probably not, actually.
Maybe we'll just...
We've sent some tweets back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly negative.
Mostly negative. But
let's read some of those.
Okay.
I sent them to you specifically so we could read them, because I don't...
I'll start with the Rotten Tomatoes score. Right now, average tomato meter, 59% rotten. Audience score 75%. So the audience is generally enjoying it more than the critics. And I think that's sort of the way you got to approach it. It's like, if you're going to go in trying to dissect this as like the zenith of cinema, it's easy to pick apart. But if you're just watching this as a fan, I think there's a lot to love here.
This is the discussing films tweet that I really disliked.
Yeah.
It says Netflix live action Avatar The Last Airbender fails to capture the spirit of the original series due to extremely poor writing and bland visuals. And I just don't agree with any of that. I disagree with like all those points. I think the writing could be better, but it's hard when you're adapting something. Mm-hmm. I don't agree about the bland visuals. I think you do. And I totally think that it captures the spirit of the show, though.
Yeah. I wouldn't say the visuals are bland. I think the acting on a green screen falls apart, but the world is very vibrant.
I thought the bending was beautiful.
Sometimes, especially in the age of X, Elon Musk's website, where you pay for verification and you get rewarded for engagement. Obviously, people are tweeting out.
I feel like any
rage baiting
people who are like, I hate this or I'm disappointed in this are like, directly comparing it to the animated show, which I get you should, but like, it's not the same. I don't know how, like, it's, do you get mad when they adapt a movie into a play and the play doesn't, and the musical is leaving things out? Like, I don't understand what people don't understand. Like,
I also think,
like, the math you were talking about on Reddit, like, fuck that person.
Yeah. Well, I also think if we look at popular adaptations, so One Piece is perhaps one of the few instances recently that we have of, I mean, okay, so we have like the Disney stuff and then One Piece, but these are things that are adapting other visual mediums. But when you look at other, you know, the pinnacle, like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter, you're adapting texts. And those are great quality movies, but you're also, you're seeing those things sort of for the first time. So there's a lot of these things that factor in. I'm seeing a tweet I sent you that it's the clip of Aang floating down in the live action. And it's, this person just wrote how it feels having a drunk sick because he's like leisurely.
I get it. I get it. Let's see here. Maybe I didn't send you as many tweets as I thought. I kept seeing them and I was so angry. We both sent the one about Ken auditioning for Avatar. Blue people.
Okay, so this person tweets about Avatar, the live-action adaptation. That was so fun. I'm sorry, I'm kind of fun first, faithful second when it comes to adaptations. And it was fun. Like, I feel like even though its flaws, it captured the spirit and adventure of the OG series. And I don't know, if you're going into this expecting it's going to be one for one or expecting it to look... Look, we have a whole podcast about animation. We know what animation does well, and it's going to do... fantasy better than live action. Yeah. But do I resent this adaptation existing? Not at all. Do I resent the 2010 movie? Absolutely. Like, this actually does capture the spirit. It respects the source material as much as people disagree with that. I think it absolutely captures the spirit of the show.
I totally agree. I think that these are kind of our closing thoughts here, I'd say also. So I think that once you finish the whole thing, any sort of change that you might have an issue with, I think makes more sense creatively. You'll be like, oh, I get why they did that. And so I really like the term fun first, faithful second. Like, I just don't understand how you could think anything they left out or changed ruined the series.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, I can get being upset. Like, oh, that was my favorite scene and they didn't do it. I understand that. But also, just enjoy it. I don't understand. Like it's so fun, and I really think this had a lot of things working against it. The creators leaving, the last live adaptation of it, of Avatar, and also just the fan cult base that the animated show has, where they're kind of being a bunch of dinguses at the moment. Like, look, we love animation and we love animated properties. That doesn't mean adaptations shouldn't exist. We are in the age of remakes, reboots, adaptations. If we're gonna do it, let's keep it, you know, something that captures the spirit of what we were doing, but also not a one for one fucking remake shot. That's not what we want either. And so that's why I think the addition of the Fire Nation scenes really upped this for me as a whole.
And you want to talk about condensing storylines? I recently watched the Yu Yu Hakusho live action adaptation Japanese series, and that condenses through the Dark Tournament series into like 6, 7, 8 episodes.
That essentially does 3 whole arcs into 5 episodes.
And I enjoyed it. They got it.
If you go in not expecting a faithful adaptation, if you just go in for fun, you'll enjoy it. But it is very different. That one I was a little disappointed in, I won't lie. But if you're only going to do 5 episodes, I get it. You know what I mean? I just wish the tournament was more a tournament. Like, it's in a big stadium with fans. I just wish we had that again. And I honestly think I would have been more satisfied. I understand the rushing of the Yu Yu Hakusho.
Sure.
So here's my question I want to part with you before we leave. It is actually not about Avatar. Okay. We've seen so many animated properties get live action remakes. Yep. What live action series, movie, what have you, do you want to see get an animated adaptation?
Ooh, do you have a good answer? Because I'm going to need a second to think. Live action.
So I'll fire a couple off. We've seen, I'd say like Star Wars is one that we've seen recently. And I think that's a good example of something where if I want an animated adaptation of something live action, I think I want it in the world. Not like, say we're going to go like Harry Potter. I don't want books 1 through 7 animated. Gotcha. I want maybe a different told story of maybe someone while Harry was at school. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, give me something different. So I think after thinking about it long and hard, I came up with kind of a clever answer. I want to see an animated Watchmen series.
I like that. Yeah. Hell yeah. I'm for it.
I think that could be a lot of fun.
That's good. I feel like everything genre I can think of that I watch is usually starts from animation or comic books or something. So I'm trying to think
what we watch a lot of. So you're like trying to really, yeah, it is weird. I did pick a comic book. So like animated might actually be the best property for it to begin with.
Let me think. Okay. One I can think of recently is, it's called Warrior, which is, it's now on Netflix. It's like based on Bruce Lee's writing, live action. Like it's like 1920s, martial arts gangster show, you know, and it's really great action scenes. So I think you could definitely up the ante if you have like the right anime studio doing that.
That makes sense. Okay.
Succession.
We were talking Game of Thrones. That could be
Game
good.
Game of Thrones would be great.
Oh, give me an animated Succession show following Cousin Greg with Tom as CEO.
Yeah. Game of Thrones is a perfect answer. Yeah. That would go
okay.
Crazy.
All right. We need to see more animated adaptations.
I would rather bring this back to Avatar The Last Airbender. I would rather this adaptation, this series, get to 3 seasons and do the whole OG series than it not exist at all.
Oh, you know 100%. What I mean? 100%. Here's my last question with it. They get all 3 books. Yeah. They do them. People like it. Like it's, you know what I mean? It's not like by the end we're not all like, wow, it's terrible. It's good. People like it. Do you want to see them do Korra?
Korra would be tougher. It'd be a lot more green screen. Then you gotta introduce robot mech suits, steampunk vibe. It's perhaps a little tougher. But I think
of the steampunk
vibe. I think if you, especially season 1, if you zero in on the hand to hand stuff, because it is the non-bender.
Maybe it could be good. Yeah.
If you had really great, you know, an older cast who can pull off the stunts and the martial arts, it could be sweet. It could be fucking sweet.
Okay.
What about you? Do you want them to leave it be?
Yeah, I think I want him to leave it be. Or
okay, it would be
it's
lame
no offense
as fuck.
To Korra.
It would be lame as fuck watching the bending game.
Here's
whatever sport.
Here's that's what I'm thinking is it can, might not be great. Here's my pitch for Korra. You do it in 1 to 2 seasons and you leave out season 2 or you just like parts of season 2 you take and you get to 3 as quick as possible.
But yeah, there's all that Vatu shit and like okay.
There's like some important shit. I feel like it goes really off the rails. If you could somehow just do
skip 2 for
the
sure.
Red Lotus.
Oh, Zaheer.
Yeah, if you could just skip
crazy.
To 3.
Yeah. Oh man,
the lava bending.
Hire us as
the
execs,
Zaheer.
Netflix.
If you could somehow just get there and care about Korra by season 3, I think there's a story there. You could combine 1 and 3 first half.
I think you just cut out 2. You don't.
You just cut out 2.
Just say season 1 traumatized.
Talk about fans being pissed. People would be pissed. But 2 is so bad. 2 is the worst of any Avatar season.
For sure. Which recently announced that there's in 2025, we're going to get the original Team Avatar animated crew in their own movie
as adults
from the original creators from their newly formed Avatar studios. So
I can't wait. We'll cover it. We'll be there. We'll be front row. Okay, and then no news today. So before we really wrap things up here, give your out of 5 score and remind the fans what sort of bender you are and why.
I think I would be an earthbender. As much as I aspire to be a carefree airbender or a go-with-the-flow waterbender, I think I'm just like a solid dude, you know? Just like I'm there,
rock
stable.
Sturdy.
I'm around.
Yeah.
So I'd be an earthbender.
You're not easily shaken. Yeah. Like I come in hot sometimes. I come in and yell and you're just like,
I stand firm in
like
my beliefs.
You're very steadfast in your beliefs. Yeah. I see it. You're definitely an earthbender.
You know, I'm a noted DCEU apologist and that's sort of the lens I'm viewing this show through. Just like what, you know, enjoy what you can.
Just enjoy it.
You know, I'm here. We're DCEU fans. We're trying to grab any scraps of stuff we like. So give me
this was great. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, this is nowhere near.
And what's your out of 5 score?
I'll give it a 3.5. You know, the 70%.
Okay,
it's a solid score.
Yeah, sure. 3.5 out of 5. Okay, for me, I think I've said it like 6 times already. So spoiler. I'm a firebender. I come in hot. I enjoy life. I am very passionate in what I feel and think and can get, you guys don't see this on the pod, but I can get angry. I can get pretty angry at small things. So I never as a child would have, He ran. That's me in a nutshell. And so I never as a child would have admitted it because the Fire Nation was the baddies. You know what I mean? I wanted to be like a waterbender or an earthbender. And as I grew up, you know, you read the descriptions and I was like, God damn it, that's I'm a firebender. But I loved all the Fire Nation shit this time around too. So I was like, oh, I'm home. I'm home. Yeah. And my I'm going to go 4 out of 5. I wanted to do 4.5 out of 5, but I feel 4 out of 5 is really fair.
That is a fair score. Before we sign, maybe hopes for season 2.
I'll be honest, and I know this maybe sounds dramatic, but I think if they can keep the course of season 1, season 2 genuinely 1,000,000% depends on Toph as a casting.
Yeah.
And dynamic with the group.
Yeah.
If she doesn't vibe, if she doesn't look blind, like, I know that sounds bad, but like, if she doesn't vibe right with the gang, it could really throw off the rails season 2's part of the heart of season 2.
I think,
because I think, oh my God, Evan, we left out the most important part of the whole series. There was no hint at Katara and Aang, but there was hint at Zuko and Katara. Are they gonna retcon it?
They won't retcon it, but
I think they are. I 1,000% think they are.
I don't know.
You didn't see that slow motion grabbing of the scarf.
I think they're teasing.
So
that.
Romantic.
They're teasing the fan base. They're stoking the flames, so to speak.
They know what they're doing. They know what they are doing. I'm stoked. Yeah. I am stoked. Wow, do you think that's when people say, like, oh, I'm stoked? That's where it comes from, like, stoking flames?
Oh, maybe, yeah. I actually don't know.
I don't know either.
The etymology of that term. Yeah, obviously, Toph will be hugely important casting.
I think Toph is, so I think that's my biggest hope, wish, want, is we need a good Toph.
I'm excited to see the Dai Li. I think Long Fang is an important casting. But there's
also... they'll have Daniel Day Kim do Long Fang again?
He wasn't Long Fang in the original...
He was in season 1. He's the voice.
Not Long Fang. The guy, the head of the Dai Li.
I just read it to you, Evan.
Someone else. Long Fang is voiced by the Lex Luthor guy, Clancy Brown. Long Fang, head of the Dai Li.
General Fong. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay.
I know my shit. But there's an actor actually from Warrior, which is now streaming on
Daniel
Netflix.
Day Kim's also in Justice League Unlimited, same year. Wow. Oh, no. He plays Chinese man, though. That's not a great role.
Wait, what? Daniel Day Kim plays the Chinese man.
The title of the character's name is Chinese man.
I have the picture perfect casting
for who? Toph?
For Long Fang. He's
for Long Fang.
I can't find a picture of him. All right.
You love fan casting.
I love fan casting. This guy is he literally looks. This is from the show. Warrior, which is now streaming on Netflix. Underrated show. I think it should get another season.
Netflix has the bangers lately, man. I just can't.
Look
with
at
the
this
Netflix
fucker.
Right. Oh,
this is Long Fang.
Okay. It's terrifying. Yeah. Put him as. Oh, yeah. I see
He's got the braid and everything in this show. Yeah. He can do it.
Yeah. One thing we didn't touch on, but I really liked and I think may disqualify this man is each nation seems to have similar, like, race, like, casting wise.
It seemed
so. The Earthbenders seem more
South Asian.
Like the Fire Nation seemed like your actor there would fit.
True.
I'm into it.
Yeah, I want season 2. Shit, I want all of it.
I'm ready. I hope they're working on it.
Judy would be an important casting. I think they could have a lot of fun with that. I don't know who
they will. I know they will. Oh, we didn't mention Cabbage Man. Yeah. I like the reference. They teased us once, twice, and then they ended on my cabbages. This is what I'm saying is if you're a fan of the show, how'd you not like that?
Yeah. I don't know. People are too picky. Take People it from a DCEU fan.
Stop saying that.
Oh man, you got anything else?
I feel like I keep we keep like wrapping up, and I'm like, oh wait, and no, I think that's all I got though. This has been fun. I had a great time. I had a great time watching it. I had a great time recapping it with you. I want season 2. I'm ready for it.
I want season 2 as well. I think there's a lot to love. Give it a watch. You know, it's not the best piece of television you'll ever watch, but it is fun.
if you're a fan, you're gonna love it. You're gonna love it. Don't even. All right. You'll love it.
I think. Well, do you want to wrap us up? Unless you get more.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. No, I didn't even have my notes up. I'm so sorry. I have a whole thing. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to listen to more, please go check out our other episodes on Apple, Spotify, and on YouTube. Please follow us at Two Dudes Watch Cartoons on Instagram and TikTok, especially for the month of March. If you're a casual listener of Two Dudes Watch Cartoons, you are going to want to follow us on Instagram in particular, I feel like, in the month of March.
I'm cooking up
That's your only tease. Yeah. Keep an eye on your podcast feed later this week. Wow. Ooh, how do I've never said that before. And then don't forget to rate and review. And once again, you know, just thanks for listening.
That'll do it for this episode of Two Dudes Watch Cartoons. We will catch you next time. Two Dudes Watch Cartoons.